and welcome back to the podcast. Today I have a very special guest with me, a dear friend of mine, Dulce Maria Lopez. So Dulce grew up in Tolimán, Jalisco, Mexico. She migrated to Santa Ana, California with her mom and brother when she was 11 years old. She is an artist and an activist. Much of her art is inspired by social and political issues happening in Mexico and throughout Latin America. She believes it is important to highlight the role that the United States has played in historically destabilizing the region with their policies and actions. Dulce has given many presentations about the media's role in Mexican elections, racism in Televisa. One of my favorite presentations has been about the narcocorridos and its impact on Mexican/Mexican-American culture. Dulce and I met while we were at UC Berkeley. Our paths crossed several times. We both did the Summer Bridge program, which was a program for first-gen students to have an easier transition to university. We also organized together. We led protests and events around political issues in Mexico and Latin America, such as the war on drugs. I am so excited for y'all to get to know her and her work. Hopefully, you all will be inspired like I am when being around her. So with that said, hola Dulce, ¿cómo estás?
Hola Ashley, I'm so happy you invited me. And we talked about this out of the podcast, but I told you before and I want to highlight again how happy and excited I am about your podcast. And yes, you just reminded me a lot about like back in the days in UC Berkeley, and I remember seeing you around organizing, and I would be like, "Well, she's so cool," and now we're here.
Yeah,
and like we will like be together in meetings and stuff like that, and now like we're here in LA. In your podcast, so thank you.
Yes, we are. Well, thank you for being here. When I was thinking about who to bring to this podcast, you were, of course, on my top, like,
gracias.
People to invite here.
Yes.
So, yeah, as I was preparing for this episode, I had so many questions and things that I wanted to talk about. But, of course, we can't get into everything in one episode, so hopefully we'll do a part two in the future. But, yeah, I definitely want to know more about what was life like for you growing up in Jalisco. It seems that much of your art is inspired by your migration story. Mm-hmm. Definitely share whatever you feel is comfortable. No pressure.
You.
You know, I don't want to exploit that, you know,
no,
your story.
It's all good. I can go for hours about how I was like growing up in Mexico. Yes, there was a lot of lacks and a lot of needs when I was growing up. But I will not change my childhood for anything. I loved growing up in Mexico. The memories that I had, but most importantly, I feel like the personality that and interests that were built onto me due to the environment that I was growing up in. To what I've seen and to what I hear, I feel growing up in the United States is very different to how it's like over there. Then again, something that I have to say is that you can go to northern, southern Jalisco, and it will look very different. You can look into different social classes, and childhood will look very different, too. And at least for me, I went to public schools in Mexico. A lot of them were not the most equipped. Most of them were taught by teachers who were practicing. So it gives a lot of chance for either winning or failing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, for experimenting. But also, I feel like that also, like, give a space to learn in different ways. And I was actually talking to one of my friends a little while ago, how I feel that growing up in Mexico and going to school there is like a la brava. And you have to learn to survive in these spaces. It's wild because thinking back at it, a lot of my classmates had some connection to the United States, even though we were so far away from this country. We all knew about this place that everyone talked about, but very few of us, if not like none of us, had yet ever been to this place. So that just tells you how much United States has been present I mean, in the childhood of a lot of the people in Mexico. And I don't know how exactly it's like today, but if back in the days it was so present, we all had like an uncle or mom or dad who is in the United States or who died in the way to the United States. I feel like that tells you a lot about the climate growing up. I also think that due to the area in which I got to live in Mexico, that also sparked a lot of my interest in politics. It was barely when the war on drugs was rising and there was a lot of comedy shows about politics in Mexico. There was this show, ¿cómo se llamaba? El Derecho de Mandar. And the kids, we were like in third, fourth grade, and we were pretending, our game will be like playing that we were organizing protests, you know? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. We will be going around the school doing protests for just like remaking the things that we will see happening in the streets. But for us, it was the game, you know? Mm-hmm. So looking back at it and now living in the United States, I'm like, dang, that's something very, that tells you a lot about that. Mm-hmm. Climate we were growing up. There was so much imagination. There was a lot of, I think also a lot of, because there's so many traditions and maybe sometimes superstitions in Mexico. We grow up with a lot of imagination. And we out of nowhere, we can start saying that the tree talks and everyone has to like play around that the tree has magic powers. So I do love my childhood, but I feel like there's an age in that when you are growing up that you realize that this place is not magical, that there's a real life, and that there's a lot of needs that you're gonna have to meet. And I was actually reading some reports that some of the countries where people claim that they had the happiest childhood is Latin America. Yet there is a point in life in which you realize that you can't survive there. So.
What was that point for you? Like, when did you realize, oh, damn, there's stuff going in my community that isn't a coincidence, mm-hmm. that it's part of this system?
For me, at least, the fact that my dad was already in the United States, he was forcibly always telling us, maybe not necessarily pointing out the things that were wrong, but at least the reasons why we had to leave. As my story of migration started before I was even born. My parents had already planned that once they had children, they were going to migrate to the United States. So I knew that from like very early age that place I was living at eventually was going to change. And for me, I feel like it caused a lot of conflict in like, oh, then why am I doing this if eventually I'm going to leave, you know? But why am I like making friends and doing well in school, you know, and all these other things if eventually I'm going to leave? But at the same time, I couldn't help, like, you know, having friends and being part of the community and everything. Yeah, yeah. It just happened. Like, but there will be instances in which I was like, what am I doing? because of that, because my parents were always having this idea that we were eventually going to come over here. I remember there was a time he took, like, a year off work to show us around Mexico and, like, different places. It was not, like, all over the country, you know, but he would also be, like, trying to make us talk with adults and ask questions and stuff like that. And a lot of those questions will be, like, ask them why they're in the United States, ask them about their job, and taking us to maybe to places in which he would be, like, you see that over there? There's this fabric of paper by Colima that is contaminating the rivers. So he will, like, take us by there and be like, you see that eventually is going to happen this, going to happen that. That is the reason why we're leaving Mexico. I remember one time, too, he took us to work in Las Tomateras. And back in the days, and even then now, there will be people living in basically houses de cartón. A lot of the communities there were indigenous. They were brought to these places, told that they were going to be earning a bunch of money and with all these lies, and they were living under terrible conditions. And my dad will take us there to work. He will always take us to work to the fields. I was working from a very early age. But I remember that time we went there because, like, as a kid in Mexico, back in the days, it was very normalized to work in the fields. But I remember seeing going to that place, and my dad showing us around and making us ask questions to different people, you know, and taking us to work with the same expectations that were given to any other adult, he would be like, that's the reason why we're leaving Mexico. Well, we can't be here anymore. I feel like that's why for a very, very early point in my age, I was having already an understanding that things were not well, that they were things off, that there was beautiful things, that yes, there was this Colima and Guanajuato, you know, but there were also a lot of reasons why at some point in my age, it was not going to be sustainable anymore to be living there.
What was that final trigger point that just pushed your family to move to the U.S.?
It's speaking mostly from my dad's triggering point, in which he realizes that he can't live there anymore. It was when my grandfather died. He died because of alcoholism. And lately I've been reflecting more about it and talking to my grandma. And honestly, I feel that, yes, alcohol and all these other things, but there was depression. Being very impoverished, my dad, he tells the stories a lot about how they were one of the most impoverished families in our community. Our community was already one of 10 most impoverished communities in Jalisco. I feel like people tend to think that Jalisco is white, but Southern Jalisco is very different to Northern Jalisco. So coming closer to Colima, to El Llano, there's even a whole book that talks about how, like, you can step into that area and smell sadness, that's where they think sadness was born. That's how far away we are from the care of the government, from the care of people actually going there and going there to see what's happening. So I feel like for my father, when my grandfather died, they were already having economic issues because, like, you know, when you have a family member, especially your father, that because of, like, his the tendencies, he might not be working. There might be, and there's also stigma, you know. There's this negligence also for support of mental health for people, for men, when there's no adequate health care systems in rural communities, especially. That's when he migrated. And coming over here, he knew that once he had children, he was going to take him to the United States. So when he met my dad, my mom, he was already living in the United States. And we were born. He tells my mom the whole plan about what he had been thinking. And when I was 2 years old, we made our first attempt to come here to the United States as undocumented. And fast forward, it doesn't work out. we go back to Mexico. But this whole time, and then that's when he starts, like, making, like, the paperwork to bring us with papers. There was not really, like, an exact instant, but more of an accumulated amount of things. Because also my mom had her own reasons of why she was like, no. When she talks about it, the machismo is a huge reason why she didn't want to live there anymore. And she was hoping that her first baby was going to be a son, and it was a daughter.
I feel like a lot of
Mexican parents. Like, they're hoping, like, to have a son first, you know? So she was like, nope, we cannot be here anymore. but fortunately, also because, I mean, you know that the whole process to bring people to United States takes a long time. It took years for us to finally come over here and stay, you know?
You migrated here at 11 years old, and I feel that 11 years old is a very crucial time for someone's development, especially for young women. You know, our bodies are changing. We're exposed to more adult things, yes. Sometimes against our will.
Yes.
Preteens can be bullies, you know?
Yes.
So how was migrating to the U.S. as a preteen, having to learn English, make new friends? How was
you
that?
You do bring up an excellent point about, like, women and migration, especially in teenage times. I feel like there were circumstances that occurred, and because I didn't know English and I did not feel confident enough, I did not say anything, that I still sometimes, like, think about it. I'm pretty sure, unfortunately, that it happens a lot in among immigrant communities, especially, like you say, for women. I feel like I can go into tangents about other stories that I could hear from other people. But migration for women can be very traumatizing. It did impact my development in the sense that back in Mexico, I mean, you know me, I'm very talkative. So I'm very talkative. But when I was in Mexico, I would be getting straight A's and everything, and like straight dieces, puro diez, puro diez. So me decían la cerebrito, ay, cállate tú. Pero when I got over here and I didn't know English, I couldn't talk. I had no one to talk. People used to think that I was quiet. And that might go get me so sad because I had so many things to talk about and I wanted to make friends, you know. But there was no way to communicate. And even though there was also a lot of Spanish speakers in my community, it still felt a disconnection between of course, like, kids are already their group of friends, and all of a sudden there's like this kid coming that cannot even speak, you know. So, and there's also the stigma that you get as an immigrant of like, ay, pobrecito, no sabes, you know, compared to other students. I feel like we will be looked down a lot, and that will also make it really hard to make friends. When I got over here, I don't know if they still do that, but when I got over here, they will separate kids based on their school performance, their academic performance. So because I was not performing well, of course, because I didn't know English, I was placed along with other students that were also not performing well, either because they had just arrived or because, you know, they had their own ways of studying, I guess, or because just really that was not their thing, you know?
Yeah.
And looking back at it, I see why it was so, unfortunately, so easy for a lot of immigrants to be eventually led into not good choices necessarily, or like recruited into groups that maybe they should not be in, you know, because we're looking for friends, we're looking for guidance, we're looking for to feel part of a community. And a lot of times those were also like communities that spoke Spanish. For me, I would hang out a lot because like a lot of people in those spaces, they like corridos and they like banda, you know, and there was this war on drugs conversation that connected us from the spaces in me coming from a place where all this thing was being grown, and coming here, hanging out with the people that were like, that were part of the community that, you know, helping in distributing. Yeah. So it's very interesting, like, seeing one side to another, and how like, unfortunately, also like a lot of those friends that I came with when I first arrived, most of them did not get through school. They were deported, they were murdered, you know. For a lot of the women, especially, like, they had to drop out because they became teenager mothers. And so it's just, I feel like for immigrant children, there is not enough support. There's more of a push to assimilate to this country rather than to celebrate where we're coming from.
I remember in one of the presentations that you gave, you mentioned that art helped be that voice for you, mm-hmm. When you migrated here, because like you mentioned, you know, you sometimes couldn't have the words to express how you felt,
yeah.
In English. So can you talk a little bit more about?
Let me tell you, Ashley. No, see, well, art for me, I had been doing that since I was in kindergarten. I had been drawing. Again, they were all like, oh my God, like, nice.
I'm sure
cool.
They were.
Yeah, they're nice, cool. But I feel like for some reason, I guess they were decent enough. Classmates, they will purchase my drawings and like ask for like their own things. So that's what I will do to earn some money and buy myself sweets. And I noticed that my other classmates will find it interesting seeing me drawing, because I didn't have anyone to talk to. So most of the times I would feel spending drawing, and you know, and eventually as other classmates will try to explain things for me, and I couldn't communicate with them either. It will be through drawing that I will like try to explain myself or try to explain myself to teachers that were not Spanish speakers. And I feel like that's when I start re-understanding what I wanted for purpose with my art. What were the things that I wanted to talk about and explain, and you know.
How would you define your art, and how has it evolved?
I'm gonna start with the second one. I feel when I was little, I was a fan of anime, you know, and I just wanted to like be able to replicate some of the things that I would see. And I was a huge fan of my mom, so I wanted to be replicating the things that she was drawing. But then as time went by, as a creative, I feel like a lot of us will start by recreating or wanting to do something similar to other people that we admire. Eventually, until we find our voice or our own way to doing things. That's my story, at least for art. I feel when I came to the United States, that's when I started having a new way on how I wanted to use art and the power that it had, which was like conveying thoughts, conveying ideas. Now, when I go to UC Berkeley, that's when I feel like everything changed. And I remember Lopez and Resendiz. Those were some of the people that, when the whole, like, the Ayotzinapa case happened, I wanted to help out in some way. I had no idea about, like, organizing or anything. And I feel, but looking back at it, I don't know about you, but at least for me, I feel like I had a lot of imposter syndrome. I remember feeling that maybe I did not knew enough to participate in those spaces. I did not knew enough to speak up about ideas. And I remember that I came up to Lopez because I was a freshman. Like, I don't know, maybe I thought he was like way older and something. And I was like, I want to participate. Like, I can draw. If y'all need some illustrator, like, I can do that. And he was like, yeah, like come through. Like, we're going to have a meeting here and that. Y ya de ahí fue cuando salió when I made the first drawing that I can say that it was political, about something that I really care about and that I deeply loved. I feel like because I felt included in this movement and I wanted to participate in some way and I didn't know how to participate, and I realized that I could do so by doing art, that's when I felt that I feel more, como se dice, more confident to show up one day con Resendiz and meet all of you, Ashley.
Se va a chiviar Luis when he hears that we mentioned
him. No, sí, o sea, yo al chile siempre la platico así, because that's how I remember that all that happened, because looking back at it, I feel very, like, self-conscious, and, you know, I don't know si es porque venía por ser de un pueblo, I don't know if it's because por ser mujer, you know, pero, and I don't know if it's because it was UC Berkeley, you, like, it often felt that you didn't know enough, pero, yeah, like, meaning, like, you meeting estas those compras from Art for Social Change and feeling like, no, like, this is all about everyone having to learn, because we're all learning, we're all evolving in this space about, like, it was okay to not know enough as long as we were interested in learning. You also ask, like, in somewhere in there, like, what inspires me? Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's the best way I can describe it, is that for me, what inspires me is anger and sadness. That's when you're gonna find me drawing. When I'm happy, I'm probably just like chilling and being social and everything else. But sometimes I really have to get myself into being sad and angry to draw. And I don't, and the other thing also, like, I just don't want to also to just be an artist, to just be painting. I want to be in the streets, putting this artwork on the walls, inviting people to draw, making projects out of my artwork. I hope I can describe my art as an interactive thing, more than just something that, oh, it looks pretty, let's keep it at museums, so let's have it in exhibits. It's nice, you know, it's nice to have it in those spaces because it's also like a recognition. But for me, if I can get people to feel inspired, motivated, or angry enough to take action, that that's a huge a huge accomplishment for me, because it's not what I'm hoping for my art is that it's not just like another drawing that says like fuck borders, you know, but that is actually being used for those purposes. That it's actually like supporting those organizations that are doing the work, that are supporting the people that are doing the work. Yeah, but most importantly, I feel for me, anger and sadness, especially anger, are some huge factors for me, because I don't want to be making art. Of course, there's the times in which there's art that's like looks pretty, but a lot of my art tends to be very raw, very like in your face, and I know some people have asked me like, why don't you just, do you have any happy art that I can buy instead, like things like that, you know? But it, for me, it's kind of like for me with like this thing that's happening too with music, about having a lot of art that just makes us happy and makes us content and makes us not having to look at reality. When we, for me, if as a society, if we're getting to a point in which we're happy all the time, it's because we are ignoring a very real part about the world that we have to look at it, that we have to process, that we have to talk about it. And that's what I hope I can do with my art. Yes, I want to draw hopeful things, but mostly I want to draw what it's hard for us to talk, but we have to look at it.
You travel to your hometown in Jalisco, Mexico frequently, right? And in your hometown, you created a mural. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about what you drew on that mural and what it means to you?
I feel like for a lot of immigrants, we often are waiting until the day we retire to go back to our countries and live the life that we migrated for. But unfortunately, by that age, we're probably too old to even enjoy it. And a lot of things change by the time that we go back. So I was very happy and I feel very privileged and fortunate, of course, of being able to go back. And especially to go back during a point in my life in which I could still be participant of on the activities and everything. So there's this restaurant, Hashi, que they sell sushi in this, it's a desert too, actually. Yeah, I sushi ahí, so I feel like when they first started, a lot of people were like, cabrón, like sushi, kid. And a lot of people there had never tasted sushi, you know, like esos sombreros, así como que pedo y las tortillas, you know. And, but the fact that it's not a very common thing in that area made it like a huge success that I hope that it continues. Pero me dieron la chance of using their wall to make a mural. And with art, I mean, you know that I like to make raw art and very political and stuff like that. Then again, I'm going back to my town. I'm hoping to go back. So I had to keep it safe. But I also wanted to celebrate our community. A lot of rural areas, we're being disappeared. We're being disappeared by the companies that are displacing us. We're being disappeared by the fact that we're being forced to migrate. We're being disappeared by not having like a system to maintain our memories and stories. In Tolimán, there's one of many communities around Mexico that I firmly believe that is another way of disappearing us. So I wanted to make a mural that could integrate all these stories and also imagine a community with more resources, with equity, with I wanted to integrate the stories from around the village. This is, was made specifically in Petacal, which is a rancheria of Tolimán, the municipality of Tolimán. And I also wanted to talk about what's happening over there. There's currently companies that are exploiting the land, that are exploiting the labor, that are contaminating our rivers and contaminating our land. Yet there, a lot of people are not informed enough about what it entails to have these companies. And when farmers are not being paid enough, they rather go work under a company that has a safe salary, you know, than hoping that once you sell your crops, you're going to make any money at all. Our community is currently divided between people that are for the companies and people that are against it. And of course, companies are going to pay it all nice. But what we don't know is that from here to 10 years, we might not have water. Like, then we might be consuming way more chemicals than we should. And we don't even know what that's going to look like, especially for future generations. We're already seeing some things. We're already seeing what's happening to the babies that are being born right now. But there's no really research. There's not really ways to prove it. And there's this other factor about how it can be dangerous, right? So with that being said, that's the context of how the mural was born. And I told my mom, and she loves drawing, and she's like, yeah, let's do it. And also because it was COVID, a lot of the kids were not in school. And it was nice because, like, they got involved into painting the mural. And sometimes, like, I was taking books or make copies of books and also, like, share it with them. So the ones that were not painting, they were reading. Sometimes even, like, las señoras will make this space so that they could sell their own, like, food, or right next to it there's like la cancha de football, so there will be like it was eventually it became like a space where there was more than just painting a mural. Like, there was a lot of things happening. It was not because, like, also las señoras y los señores, they would come through and they would be like, that's not how the plaza
of
looks
course.
Like, you know? And like, I'm like, okay, señora, like, what would you suggest? Like, yo pienso que debería de tener tal cosa. Okay, oh, ese señor, that you should paint it with a red truck, porque el señor, he looks like el señor Sutano, and he has a red truck. So it was like little things like that.
Yeah.
So I feel like it all became, there was this sense that the mural was made by everyone.
Community effort.
Yeah, it was a community effort. And but also because the mural was, like, touching these topics about agriculture and, like, the current situations in our community. People that were going to that space were eventually coming out of there having conversations about gender, about the gender issues and machismo that's happening. So I feel like once all that was done, it was nice because another person from Tolimán, like, he was really nice about donating lights so that once it's dark, like, there's, like, lights in the mural. Another person donated like, cortinas so that there could be, like, an opening of the mural, you know? Beatriz showed up and made a whole video. So it was very, like, community-oriented. We even got a chance to celebrate a lady who she was a partera, and there was not enough recognition about her labor in that community. But we got to paint her and put like a little like history about who she was and why she was important in our history. So I feel like coming out of that place, I did see more people engage into these conversations about what's happening with the water, and like, and also the moments of you know, like los adultos advising also the children about, especially for women. Like I saw a lot of like times in which like we will have really nice conversations about like mija, like, you know, estás chica. Once you get to this age, like, be sure to do this, be sure to do that, go to school, go to that. Like, it was a beautiful moment. It was definitely hard. 30 days drawing from 8 a.m. to 8 in the night, you know. It was definitely, and the people who knows that area is hot. Especially como a eso de las 12, like, pega un sol horrible, 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 horrible. Y a la tierra, la tierra ahí es like, o sea, es como talco. Mm-hmm. Se levanta con el aire, no te deja ver. I will be like sometimes wearing like goggles because like se me subía la tierra a los ojos. Oh my God, it was.
¿Era durante el verano when you were doing this?
Lo empecé creo que en febrero to like May. Something like that, February to May, maybe.
Is the climate usually like hot there?
Oh the I'm from is really hot. So, but painting during that, I remember like sometimes I will be painting, y los señores que se los albañiles, they will be like going home already, and they be like, mija, ya, está haciendo un solazo, ya vete de ahí. I'm like, no, like I need to finish this. But I think it was a very nice mural. It was outside of just like that it looks pretty or whatever. The fact that it brought community together and it became an opportunity to have conversations that maybe otherwise will not be having. Because also during that time, elections were happening. And you know in Mexico how when elections happen, all the empty walls they want to use it to announce their parties and vote for,
oh, yeah,
for this, vote for that. And they couldn't use that. That wall, and even the señor, the owner of the restaurant, he was like, no, like, I don't want to use it for that. Like, I'm not going to, I'd rather have, like, a mural or something, but not political propaganda, you know? So, and the kids were so excited about, like, hopefully making other more murals. I'm really hoping I could get another grant. If someone out there is hearing, I want to get another grant and continue making more murals. And, because out of there, I feel there wasn't many kids that were left con muchas ganas of doing their own things. Some of the paint was given to the kids so they could, like, do their own thing, you know. And that was an opportunity to get them to learn art and things like that. But, like, anything, we need support, right? But I do hope that we will continue doing that.
Yeah, so this mural had the impact you hope, you know, your art will have, spark conversations, mm-hmm, spark community.
Yeah, especially like this idea, also empowering the communities. For rural communities, I feel that we're often shamed from where we come from, for our origins. There's always efforts of assimilating us to, like, city-like ideas. Yet, a lot of the times, even, like, in universities, I will see them talking about ideas that were talked about in my town all the time, just in fancy words. And how much were we paying for tuition? Like, a bunch of money!
Like 17 a year, just tuition, not including housing,
exactly,
transportation fees,
exactly. So unfortunately, I feel like it's not until a white person with some kind of title given at some kind of institution that we start listening to these ideas. But a lot of times you can go to this to these communities and hear the same very similar ideas, just not with the fancy words. And also, like, let's be honest, a lot of these communities can also be problematic. Communities are not perfect. We cannot romanticize the pueblos. But we also have to recognize that it's because of long history of colonialism. And, of course, there's still machismo. Of course, there's racism and all these other isms, you know. But that doesn't mean that we are not deserving of better opportunities or better resources. And that we're also deserving of having our stories told and preserved.
So you've talked about how a lot of your pieces are political and raw. You know, you like to highlight difficult issues and hope it gets people talking about them, right? So some of my favorite pieces of yours are your Vivas Nos Queremos, where you have, you know, the Guadalupe there. And then your social media one, where you have, like, a person, like, looking at their phone with, like, the different, you know, like, screens in front of them. There is this one that you have of Uncle Sam snorting cocaine. So, you know, some of these can spark controversy, you know? And especially when you use dominant political and religious figures like that, which, you know, I'm all for it, but there might be some triggered. Has anyone ever disagreed with your art and, like, or sent you, like, hateful messages?
The people that are especially very, like, discontent about what I draw, I've seen people, like, from our community, like, elders, señoras, like, the Guadalupes are usually, like, you know. But eventually becomes a cool conversation. More than anything, there has been more of a censure. There's not even chance of conversating about this paintings or anything. They're just like, you know what? We decided this is not going to go up on the gallery. And that's it. Without having any talk about why, about what can we learn from it, what can we not. So that is a part that I feel that it hurts me more when there's not even a chance to talk about it. It was about to happen once in Berkeley. Eventually, it was left alone and put in the gallery. Recently, I've been going on pop-ups and having my art out there. People sometimes come up to me, like, asking questions. It's not, like, about, like, when they're curious, you know? They're asking questions as in, like, what were you thinking, you know? Mm-hmm. But eventually, we might not agree necessarily, but at least there was some talk, some reflections. Sometimes I even learned new things, you know, like maybe better ways that I could have portrayed that thought. I have had people that I would not expect to get positive feedback from. One time, there's this one, El Jefe de Jefes, so there's like this drug lord.
The Naco one?
There's this drug lord, apparently, and they're like set on like a mountain of coke. Very questionable people have come up asking, like, I really like your painting. Can I buy it? How much do you want? You know, like, if you ever think about, like, selling it, let me know. I want it, you know, things like that. And I'm like, okay, that was surprising. It's not up to for sale right now. Any of my paintings are, like, the original ones, they're not for sale. But it's interesting seeing different responses from people. I know, like, political figures sometimes they have come up not necessarily very content, but more as in, like, sure, you can have it here so people don't say that we are trying to censure you. Especially now that I feel my artwork is more out there, it's been interesting because I see it in spaces I would have not thought that they would have wanted it there. A couple of years ago, on Independence Day, me and some friends decided that we wanted to go paste around the Consulado de Mexico some of the pieces. One of them was la de Pobres Mexicanos, que cada Independence Day they scream for a space of an hour, maybe to be quiet for the rest of the year. And of course, they took it down, you know, but a year later, it became part of an exhibition. So it was inside
at the consulado.
Even though a year before they took it down, you know. So there's this part of, like, of course, it's censured. There's this other part of, like, yes, we're going to give you space, but what kind of space are they actually giving me? If they're just, like, going to put it, like, all the way in the corner just to say that they are allowing freedom of speech, you know? So,
yeah.
But censure is definitely, like, a part that I feel like that's when it hurts me more than having people coming up to me not liking what I draw. Yeah, and that social media too sometimes it has taken that one. Del Tio Sam, they took it down a couple times.
Instagram.
Instagram.
Thank you so much, Dulce, for being here. I definitely do hope that there's a part two in the future. But yeah, let people know how they can follow you on social media, where to purchase your art if they want to. Let them know.
Well, you can find me in Instagram and on Twitter and on now TikTok. I'm trying to figure out the TikTok situation. You can find me on my website, dulcemlopez.com, where you can also find my shop in there. Posters, stickers, and all these other good things. If anyone is down to collaborate, if anyone's down to be doing murals, to going into different spaces and bringing community together to make art, please let me know. I'm always happy to collaborate.
Hit her up.
Yes.
You heard it here.
Please. And follow Ashley, please.
Cool. Thank you so much for everyone who is listening, and catch you all in the next episode.
Woo! Made it. Bravo.